All right. And now we'd like to welcome our guest for this week, Dr. Josephine Briggs. She's an internist and nephrologist, as well as an accomplished researcher, and she currently directs the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine.
83 million Americans spend an estimated $33.9 billion on complementary and alternative medicine. I don't like to call it that either, in managing their own health. Dr. Briggs and her agency are researching the science behind these treatments, whether they be acupuncture, dietary supplements, massage therapy, or meditation.
So we've invited Dr. Briggs on her agency's 10th anniversary to look back at their accomplishments, the evidence they're building on popular CAM therapies out there, and future research directions. Josephine, it's great to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me. Glad to join you.
I have a quick question to start off, because I've been looking through some of your previous positions en route to joining this agency of NIH. You directed the neighboring division of kidney, urologic, and hematologic diseases for close to 10 years, then seemed to join the Howard Hughes Medical Institute as senior scientific officer for a few more years. And from there, you took your current position focused on CAM. So my question is, how did CAM therapy and research enter into the picture for you during those other posts? I mean, or did it? And if not, was this like a whole new ballpark for you?
Well, to a certain extent, it is a new ballpark, but a fascinating one. The first director of the Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine was Steve Strauss. Steve Strauss was a leading vaccine investigator here at the NIH, and he and I partnered on a number of projects. We put together a big workshop on placebos, and that was I was at that point overseeing a portfolio of research in which I was just struck with the magnitude of the placebo effect and thought it was worth getting people to talk about. Steve was also very interested in that because it is certainly one component of the way a lot of alternative therapies may help people. And so Steve and I partnered on that, and it got me very interested in mind-body medicine and learning more about how hope and expectancy and all these other things that go into placebo responses help people. And I enjoy overseeing at Hughes. I was overseeing a very interesting, wonderful science, but I missed the active role of overseeing human subjects research, which is in some ways my first love. And so I was very pleased to be selected for this complex and interesting job.
Well, what's your personal feeling about, once again, complementary therapies? I hate that term. They're therapies that are non-allopathic. Let's call them that.
Right.
What's your personal feeling about them?
Well, you know, it is a big grab bag. We're talking about an incredible range of different interventions that people undertake, often as self-care, to improve health conditions or promote health and wellness. And so in some settings, I'm impressed that these modalities may help, for example, with pain management. Obviously, the broad umbrella includes some therapies that are potentially dangerous or very bad alternatives to conventional care. But NCAM's mission is to make sure there's good science going into things that are important to Americans' public health.
I think that's great. Let me ask you a question I've asked. I've done another number of interviews with people doing alternative therapies in standard settings, like shock trauma units.
Mm-hmm.
And our Western therapies are based on a model that the body is very mechanical. It's if you go to the chemical level or the physical level, it's a machine. We replace parts. We use drugs. And the let's call them the Eastern therapies are based more on the human being as a spiritual, energetic field.
Right.
Right. And so those therapies are based upon that. So how do you translate those therapies into the Western model? Because if you're just going to, in my feeling, if you're just going to take acupuncture needles and stick them into somebody instead of giving them penicillin, that's really not what we're talking about here. How do you
right.
deal with that?
At times there are mismatches between conventional scientific methods and studying complementary and alternative medicine. But I think most of the time those problems can be solved. We are after rigorous tests of whether things work. Acupuncture is an interesting example of some of the problems. If you very precisely match the context and whole experience of acupuncture, but don't exactly put the needles on the meridians, you may still get benefit. because the whole context of care that has developed through thousands of years of Chinese experimentation may be part of how acupuncture works, and it may not simply be the needles or the meridians, and I think that's what the research is pointing to. Nonetheless, acupuncture does seem, for at least susceptible people, to be an intervention that modifies the perception of pain. And the data on that, I think, is coming together.
Now, when you use the word susceptible people, there's a suggestion there that you're susceptible to something. It almost sounds like you are putting it in almost in the basis of fraud, like I'm susceptible to this charlatan.
Maybe it's a bad word. Right. There are some people for whom, and acupuncturists, even in China, I was in a traditional Chinese medicine facility in China, and the acupuncturists recognize when they try to do acupuncture anesthesia that some people get better analgesia than others. And so whether this is similar to hypnotizability and other susceptibility to kind of mind-body interventions, I don't know. I think it works better for some people than others.
And it's really interesting in terms of you telling us how you kind of got interested in this through monitoring placebo effects and then looking at complementary alternative medicine, which I think a lot of practitioners, more conservative, traditional practitioners, if we want to call them that, will say that a lot of CAM therapies rely on placebo.
Right.
And I'm wondering if you had to change your views after studying or looking into and examining things such as acupuncture, which is getting a little bit more support from the evidence that you've been kind of building, if you've had to kind of broaden your field of view a little bit, or if you still kind of maintain that healthy dose of skepticism with what you do here.
Oh, I maintain a very healthy, I'm naturally a skeptic, and I maintain a pretty healthy dose of skepticism, and you know, I'm used to running double-blind trials of drugs. I think that's the right way to approach studying drug effects. I'm not sure that it's the right approach, however, to ask some healthcare questions like, does this help you with your pain, where blinding may not really get us closer to that, to the real question. But to stay skeptical is, I think, part of being a rigorous scientist.
Mm-hmm. So here's a question for you. What's in your medicine chest today? Is there anything that you're having in your personal medicine chest that you wouldn't have used before because you've been exposed to it?
I'm staying pretty skeptical. I was just on vacation with my grown-up sons and their partners and my husband, and we all had colds. And I was, you know, I tend when I have a cold to go for things like honey and some tea or maybe a little rum with the tea. And the kids were reaching for the NyQuil. So I kind of like these natural remedies if possible. But I certainly take vitamin D and I take calcium. I do a little yoga, I do a lot of exercise, but I'm not a regular supplement user.
Well, I think what you just said brings up a really interesting question. What you're talking about are two alternatives. You like the honey and tea. I do too, by the way. In steam, they like the NyQuil. So shouldn't we say that everything is an alternative, including a surgical approach is an alternative? Like in gallbladder disease, you can have a medical approach, a surgical approach. They're both alternatives.
I'd get that stone out of there.
Yeah. I think we all want evidence. You know, yeah. That's what it comes down to. And in management of colds, at least for adults, these are all probably perfectly reasonable, perfectly safe alternatives. For young babies, we've learned that some of the over-the-counter remedies may not be as safe alternatives as we thought. But you know, for serious and important health decisions, I'm a believer in evidence.
So are we. But the public goes out and buys billions of dollars worth of these therapies, and I see them in the stores too. Why do you think that's so? Do you think that it is the placebo effect, or that doctors are just not satisfying patients, that we can't cure them? What's the
big
push?
That's an interesting question, and I don't really know the answer. One thing I do want to say is that we're pretty convinced that the NIH-sponsored research is impacting on what public is doing. Our investigators just published a large study on ginkgo for the treatment of cognitive decline a very negative study. The supplement industry is concerned that will impact on sales, and certainly the past history of the other large studies is many of which have been negative, is that they have impacted on sales.
Right.
However, we've also created a fair amount of evidence that fish oil may be beneficial, and that's also impacting on sales. So the science, we think, is impacting on what the public does.
Okay, if you'll give me a minute here. If you're just joining us or taking your fish oil, you're listening to Second Opinion Live on REACH MDXM 160. I'm Dr. Michael Greenberg alongside Dr. Matt Bernholtz. Find us on Twitter at REACHMD or find us by phone, 888-MD1-REACH. That's 888-631-7322. We're talking with the director of the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine at the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Josephine Briggs, and she is charming.
Now, Dr. Briggs, here's a question since we've kind of moved a little bit into supplements. We don't want to cover it too long, but, I mean, what is your take on current supplement regulation in this country? I mean, it is a massive industry. And that creates a lot of what we would call snake oil out there that's just not regulated. But I'm wondering what, you know, in your kind of interesting position, your take is on that.
Well, I think something that concerns me greatly and is clearly receiving congressional attention is the fact that the supplements for weight loss, for sexual function, for athletic performance, are sometimes adulterated with active agents. And I think that's a substantial concern. I think the FDA is worried about it, Congress is worried about it, and it seems to me the biggest safety concern in supplements right now.
Well, how about the other side of that issue? I mean, my patients come in with things that they claim are supposed to work for things, and if you read the package insert, it says not intended to treat any disease or cure any disease or do anything after all except have you pay for it, and people are buying this stuff and people are allowed to sell it legally.
Right. No, I think that there are some important concerns here. I think one of the things that worries me is the tendency of people to take lots of pills, and that includes supplements and in fact, overuse of prescription medications as well. I read there's some recent data from the CDC that people in nursing homes are taking on average 10 pills per 10 different active medications, and we all know how horrified we are when we see somebody walk into our offices with a bag of 12 or 15 supplements and 5 prescription meds. The chance of interactions are huge. So these are big concerns, not just supplement overuse, but generally too much pill popping.
Right, and I'm horrified because I don't know what half of them are.
Right.
And then they show me these names or what they're doing.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we move into some talk about the center itself? I mean, this is something that's obviously top of mind for you. I want to find out a little bit about, it's been around for 10 years now, this agency, and I want to hear about some of the accomplishments and some of the biggest setbacks and challenges that you think have come through the doors in the last 10 years.
Right. So one real achievement of NCAMS has been the large, very carefully performed randomized clinical trials of a number of dietary supplements. And I just mentioned the Ginkgo study. There's studies on St. John's wort, on echinacea, on fish oils. And these have been very well performed, very carefully developed studies. There were a lot of challenges in developing well characterized products and in general in approaching this whole area. But I think the studies have been, by and large, very well implemented and have had substantial public impact. I think that the other area that we are seeing impact has to do with pain management. There are guidelines from the American Pain Society and the American College of Physicians on the value of massage, manipulative therapies, and acupuncture as part of the management of low back pain. Every doc who manages people with low back pain knows what a tough problem this is. But we're beginning to see a body of data that suggests that in some settings these approaches can be effectively integrated into care and help. So I see those as two big achievements. We're also learning lots of interesting fundamental science on how compounds in green tea affect our biology, on how the cocoa flavonoids may affect inflammatory disorders. I mentioned some of the fish oil work in humans. There's also very interesting work on non-essential fatty acids and their effect on biology that I think will yield a better understanding of how our diets affect our biology. Another great area is probiotics. We're learning some very interesting things as we learn more about the bugs that live in us, about ways in which modifying them may affect disease. So I think a lot of good things have come together over the last decade.
Yeah, I've heard some work about probiotics from Europe that they actually can help avoid eczema if mothers take them while they're pregnant. Just some research starting.
Yeah, so. It's a very interesting hypothesis, and it really deserves more work. There's pretty good evidence that probiotics help with the necrotizing enterocolitis in newborn babies, premature newborn babies. But the possibility that particularly in non-breastfed babies, that adding probiotics to formula may affect the ultimate development of allergies, I think is very promising and really worthy of more work.
Well, I think the work that you're doing is really good, and we like that you're bringing science into it, and we thank you for joining us today.
Well, I've enjoyed being part of your conversation, and thanks for inviting me.
Thank you.
Okay, our guest today has been Dr. Josephine Briggs, director of NCCAM, which is the